Holding on Lamed Vav, Amud Aleph, the fifth line. We're discussing the question of whether the Kohenim are, when they bring the Korbanos on our behalf, are they doing it as our Shluchim or as Hashem's Shluchim? We said the Nachdamina would be if the Kohen, so we had the scenario that we discussed yesterday with Kohen Shimon, where Reuven is also to have, Reuven, the Yisrael, is also to have Anah from the Kohen Shimon. So if we say that that Shimon is the shliach of Hashem, no big deal. Then he's not having hanah from him. There's only a mitzvah involved, and mitzvah lab b'honis mitnu. But if we say that Shimon is acting as Reuven's shliach, then we would say that he can't, because then he can't have, then Reuven can't have hanah from him. So we established so far that if the korban that Reuven is going to bring is the korban of a mechusa kapara, where without that korban he can't eat kodshim or whatever, then we would say that it doesn't matter. Then, in fact, we brought Rabbi Yochanan a saying that tikka korban doesn't require the das of the person that's being brought on their behalf. We can have, for example, a person can have a child who's a zov or a zova, or a wife who's a shoita who gives birth, and they can bring the korban on their behalf. So it doesn't require their das. So therefore, we can say that in that case, it's not considered to be their shlichus. So therefore, it's not a hanah. But the question would be about regular korbanos. So the Gemara says tanan.
Who's the one who made the neder?
Doesn't really matter. The point is that it doesn't really matter whether it's Shimon made the neder and said you Reuven are also in my hanah, or the other way around, whether it's Reuven who said I am also in Shimon's hanah. Usually, we assume that the one who is also is the one who made the neder. But doesn't have to be. We call him the Madir, and the other one is the Mudir. But it doesn't have to be that way. Anyway, Tanan. So we look now. Let's look at another possibility. We learn in a Mishnah in Gittin, Hakoyinim shepiglu b'mikdash. If a Kohen bringing a korban made it pigul in the Beis Mikdash, and pigul is we're doing one of the four essential avoidas of the korban. You have the shchita, the receiving of the blood, which is called Kabbalah, walking it over to the Mizbeach, which is called Halacha, and sprinkling or otherwise applying it to the Mizbeach, which is called Zrika. All of those things, in any of one of those things, if the Kohen has a thought during it that he's going to offer part of the Korban beyond the time that you're allowed to, for example, the next day, or that he's going to eat some of it beyond the time you're allowed to, let's say with a Hakas or an Asham the next day, with a Shlom 3 days from now, whatever, then the Korban, as of right now, becomes pigul. And anybody who eats from it is chayiv kares. And the owner, of course, is going to have to bring another korban as well, because he wasn't yotze with this one. So now the Mishnah says it. So the Mishnah and the Mishnayos and Gittin over there in the middle are discussing various cases where a person causes hezek, what's called hezek she'inin nikker. You can't look at the korban and see that there's any difference. The difference, of course, is a ruchniistic difference. It's a difference in halacha. Nevertheless, the Mishnah says that if they do that, the Mikdash, in the Beis Mikdash, Mizidin Chayovim, if they do it, the Mezid, then they are Chay. Chay of what? Now, the Rambam actually says they would be Chay to pay the owner because they caused his korban to be ruined. The Ravid actually disagrees and says the Chayovim over here doesn't, it would only mean Chayovim Bidei Shamayim. I mean, they're Chay in Hashem's eyes, and if they want to do Tshuva, then they should pay the person, but not that Beis Din can force them to. Anyway, whatever the case.
What do they have to do? What do they have to do?
They'd have to pay the owner. They caused that.
What do they have
to make a pigle? So during one of the four avoidas of the korban, the kohen would have in mind, it's my focus, Rashi and Tosfos, whether it's enough to just think it or whether he actually has to verbalize it or whatever, that he's going to eat part of the korban or offer part of the korban outside of the time that you're supposed to. So, for example, let's say it's a chatas, for example. So if the Kohen, while he's shechting it, or while he's receiving the blood, or whatever, thinks that he's going to eat a kezias or more of that chatas tomorrow, where a chatas is supposed to be eaten only today and that night, then that would make the Kohen pickle. Or if he has in mind that he's going to burn the fat of it that has to be burned on Mizbeah, that he's going to do that tomorrow, then that would also make a pickle. So now, if he did that...
So what's the connection to our sugya?
Well, it's relevant to our sugya because that's what we're going to discuss. We're discussing whether the Kohenim are considered the shluchim of the owners or not. So our Kohenim should pigle b'mikdash. So if the Kohen makes a korban pigle in the b'mikdash, mizidin chayovin, if he did it b'mezid, then he's chayev pay according to the Rambam, chayev b'dei shemayim according to the Ravid, ha shogigim p'turin. Well, the implication would be that if they did it b'shogig, they would be potter. but Elisha Pigul on Pigul. The implication would still seem to be, though, that the Pigul is still, that it is indeed still Pigul. And in fact, there's a Gyusa on the side over here who said, and the Rosh says this, that it's not just the Gemara is inferring it, there's actually a Braisa that spells that out. That even though the Beshogig, the potter from paying, because it was Beshogig, the Pigul was still Pigul. So, if you say the Kohenim are considered Shluchim of Hashem to bring our Karbonas, Hainu should be Golem Pigul, then we understand why it is that the Pigul is Pigul, because Hashem made them a Shliach for all purposes. So in this case, whether they did it for Shogig, whether they did it for Mezid, they're still a Shliach, and therefore as a Shliach, they have the ability to make the Korban Pigul. Ela Iyamet Shluchim Didan Havu, but if you say the Kohenim are considered our Shluchim, a mighty golem pigul. Then why, at least in the case of, so why would their pigul be pigul? Why would it be effective? Le Malay can't the owner of the korban say, shlicha shavisicha, I made you a shliach, and as we usually say with a shliach, l'takuni v'loy la'avsi. I made you a shliach in order to fix things up, to do things correctly for me. I never made you a shliach to mess things up for me. We have that all over the case in Shas, where a person appoints a shliach to do something, and the shliach messes up, and the mishaleach has the right to tell him that was not within the purview of your shlichus. So why over here would we say? So wouldn't that prove that the kohenim are in fact Hashem's shluchim? Now, is the Gemara's proof from the case where he's doing only b'shogeg, or also from the case where he's doing it b'mezid? The Ran explains that it's one thing if the kohen does it b'mezid. Now you have like this, for example. Let's say Reuven owns an animal. Now, suppose that Shimon goes and declares that animal to be a korban for Avodah Zarah. Nothing happens. But if Shimon were to do an actual maisa with the animal, for example, he actually takes it and offers it as a korban to Avodah Zarah, then it will become also b'hanah. He's going to be responsible to pay Reuven, but we can't say, yeah, but you're not my shliach, because the fact is he did a maisa with it. So therefore, so the Ran says, so it's one thing if he does it b'mezid. Then you could say that he's not doing it in the shliach, but he did do an actual maisa with it, and therefore that would be enough to make it pigul. But if he did it for shogeg, he didn't intend to make the korban pigul, so he's still functioning as your shliach, so why wouldn't you be able to tell him, you're not my shliach for that purpose? And that's how the Ran knows. The Rashba actually says that no, even if it was b'mezid, and the Gemara's question could still go, because you could say in that case, having made himself no longer a shliach of the owner, because he's doing something against what the owner would have wanted, the owner wouldn't want it to be pigul, of course, then it's possible and he has to bring another korban. Therefore, in effect, it's as if he didn't shech the animal at all, it's as if he did, as if I could stab the animal or did something like that, where it's not obviously then the shritta would be possible and it wouldn't be considered pigul. Pigul is only when everything else was kosher except for this one wrong thought or one wrong idea of the coins. So therefore, here it wouldn't be considered even here it wouldn't even be considered pigul at all, just because it would be considered that it wasn't even shechted. And then the Rosh says that also the question is even b'mezid. He doesn't spell it out, but it seems that he just says a person cannot answer something that doesn't belong to him. So it sounds like he's saying that even if he does a maisa with it, he can't answer it. So therefore, even if we say like the Rashba's shita, that he is that because he's doing an action, therefore he should be able to answer it. But the fact is, the Rosh says we don't see that. Now there are other Gemaras that imply that he can, but maybe the Rosh holds that in this case, since the thing is only a thought, then therefore maybe it's not considered a big enough maisa. Whatever the case, the point is, so given that we have, though, that the fact is it will become pigul, whether b'shogeg or b'mezid, doesn't that show that the only way to make that work on the face of it is if the kohenim are the shluchim of Hashem, rather than the shliach of the person who sent it? The answer is Amri. The Gemara answers, they said in the Beis Medrash, no, shiny gabi pigul. Pigul is a special case, the omakura lo yechoshev lo yimikomokim, because the pasuk says it will not be thought. Now, in context, what the pasuk means is the korban won't be thought as acceptable. Hashem won't accept such a korban. But we also understand that it means that that actually constitutes the lo yisaseh, lo yichashev, the kohen shall not think a wrong thought that would make the korban pigul while he's doing any of the avodas. And if he does, then it becomes pigul. So mikomakim, and the pasuk is saying it becomes pigul regardless. So yes, in that particular case, it wouldn't matter whether the koyin is considered the shliach of the owner or not. In that particular case, it would be gzeiras hakasuv that the owner is not able to tell the koyin, I'm sorry, I made you my shliach only for good, not for bad. He wouldn't be able to say that because the pasuk is overriding that with the words lo yichoshev lo. So that doesn't prove, though, for other areas, including in particular what's relevant to our sugya over here. If Reuven is also to have anah from Shimon, can Shimon be bringing Reuven's korban? The Gemara has not answered the question. Ultimately, though, the Ram says that, as we talked about yesterday, there is a Gemara in Kiddushin that says very clearly that they are considered the shluchim of Hashem. And the idea behind it being that so ultimately here the Gemara was trying to bring a proof from a Mishnah or a Braisa, couldn't find any, but we have the Svara that Rav Huna says over there, how would it be possible that they are Shluchim? Then the logic would be we should be able to bring our own Korbanos. You can't possibly have that something that another person can do for you, but you can't do yourself. So if we said the Kohen are the Shluchim of Hashem, okay, that's how it is. Hashem made them the Shluchim to bring our Korbanos. We can't, because Hashem took that away from us. But if you said there are Shluchim, if our Shliach is able to do something, we ought to be able to do it as well, and we know it's not so.
We wouldn't really be able to do ourselves, but we're not Kohanim. You know,
that's the point. That's the point, in other words. That's the point. If we were to say the Kohanim are considered our Shluchim, if we were to say that the Kohenim are our Shluchim, then we should be able to do the Avodas ourselves instead of delegating them to the Kohen. And by the way, I mean, you could have, for example, let's say you take for example, well, actually any Korban, elsewhere the Gemara discusses exactly what part of the Azara is considered Tzofa, and as far as that Kodshim can be shechted over there, the Halacha is, it includes areas where Yisraelim are allowed to walk. So you would be able to have, I mean, it's a shrit that anybody can do anyway. But even the Kabbalah and the Zrika and everything, of course we know only a Kohen can do those. But if we were to say that the Kohenim are our Shluchim, then the logic would be incomprehensible why we couldn't just do them ourselves instead of delegating them. So that shows that the Kohenim are in fact the Shluchim of Hashem.
They're not really full Shluchim of either us or Hashem. I mean, Shliach Shel Adam Kamusay. How can you compare anyone to HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
No, that's not
they
the
have
point.
A mitzvah.
No,
that is
right.
The point.
The point is, in other words, Hashem has appointed them to be the Shluchim for this. That's what we mean. That's what we
okay.
mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, the Kohen himself can he bring his own
Korban? The Kohen himself can bring his own Korban, yeah. In fact, the Rav Mefoshim will explain that the whole question of the Gemara over here was specifically where Kohen is bringing his own Korban. When Yisrael was bringing a Korban, maybe you could say, okay, there's no question the Kohen is Hashem's Shliach because of Rav Huna's logic. But if one Kohen brings a Korban to the Beis Hamikdash and instead of offering it himself, he delegates it to another Kohen, maybe you could say that then the other Kohen is acting as a Shliach, so that the Gemara is leaving the question open. Interesting in this connection, by the way, we know that there are various last names, various family names that are common almost exclusively to Kohenim. Cohen, cats, etc. Another one, there's a name, I don't know how common it is, but it exists, called Kashdan. And that is also a name that's that you find among Kohenim, because it stands for the phrase from our Gemara, Kani Shluchim Dirachmana Ninu, that the Kohenim are the Shluchim of Hashem. So somebody, some Yedea Sefer, some Tamid Chacham, I guess, back in the day, who was a Kohen, took that expression, made an initials out of it, and adopted it as his family name. Because he's not tied to pay, because the Chachamim, so really Midaraisa, the Gemara explains there in Git, Midaraisa, he wouldn't be liable to pay in either case, because it's as a chain of nicker. Midrabbanan were imposing a penalty on him, so they didn't impose the penalty on him when he did it for Shrogi, because look, he's Shrogi.
That's been well, and the
Okay. Gufar, so Gemara says, now, getting back to something we said before, in the course of this discussion about the Kohenim being our Shluchim, or Hashem's Shluchim, we mentioned a point that Rabbi Yochanan said, HaKol Tzrichin Das, Chutz Mimechosek HaParah. We said, whenever you bring a Korban on somebody's behalf, you have to have his Das, because after all, the Korban is coming for his Kapara, with the exception of Mechosek Kapara. So we said, again, if a person is a Zav, or a Mitzoda, or a Yeledes, or whatever, then the Korban can be brought on their behalf without their Das. And Rabbi Yochanan proves it. Shari Adam may be korban on one of our bnei sevakanim. After all, we see that a person can bring a korban on behalf of his young children. So if he has a son who's a zav or a daughter who's a zava, for example, then he can bring a korban on their behalf, and they're able to eat kodshim afterwards. So therefore, we see it doesn't require their das, because of course a katan or a kana doesn't have das. But other than that, you always need das. The Ran, by the way, brings up an interesting point. There's a Mishnah in Shkalim, which is the Gemara discusses in Kedushin. Suppose that you find a lost animal somewhere near Yerushalayim. If it's close enough, if it's within a certain radius of the city of Yerushalayim, we have to assume that it was an animal for a korban that got lost. And then you have all kinds of complicated dinim about what you do, what kind of korban do you bring it as, depending on the age of the animal, and the gender, and then what type of animal. Then you narrow down what the possibilities are, and you bring it as the appropriate type of korban. What happens to having the owner's das? So the answer is, so the Ran brings from Tosfos elsewhere, that since it was lost, then the owner himself thinks he has still has the das. You know what? Whoever finds it should just bring it as a korban. So therefore, you still have das by them. But ordinarily, in other words, so you need the actual das of the owner.
Yeah, if that happens, then the owner goes ahead and gets another one instead.
So then actually, so you have issues over there. You do have issues over there. For example, if you were to bring it as a chattas, you might have a problem. The owner may have already brought it. May have already brought a chattas, and then this one is a second chattas, and you have dinim about that, the tomos, whatever. So you have the Mishnah and the Gemara discuss over there all the details. It's in Kedushin. We'll get to it, Bez Hashem, next year. Anyway. So the Gemara says, Elameata, by that logic, if you're telling me that a person can bring karbonis on behalf of his children, Yovi Adam Chatas Chayv Achaveiro. By the same logic, why can't we say that one person should be able to bring a regular chatas on behalf of somebody else? The Gemara always calls, we've talked about this before, the Gemara always calls a regular chatas, chatas chaylev, even though there are about 30 or 40 mitzvahs for which a person would bring a chatas, for two reasons. One, because chaylev is one of the more common things that a person might eat and become chayev chatas, because you have chaylev around the house, you shecht an animal, you have a fat around, it's very easily confused with shuman, which is the kosher fat, and therefore you're going to end up eating it by mistake. Or the other reason is because the Torah talks about you're not allowed to eat chaylev, and right after that, it starts talking about the dinim of a chatas. So therefore, whatever the case, chatas chaylev is just the Gemara's term for a regular type of chatas that you bring for any of 30 or 40 avers.
That chaylev that you can only eat good, that still goes on the...
Usually it goes on the mizbeach. That's why you're not allowed to eat, right? Anyway, so by the same logic, why shouldn't we say, if you're saying that that a person can bring a korban on behalf of somebody else, now you have something called ein donin efshim. You have something called ein donin efshim mishii efshir. Sometimes in halacha we have something where look, there's no other way to do it. So therefore that this is how you do it. Now the question is, can you learn from that to other places where it would have been possible to do it differently? Now let's consider our case. You're saying that if a person has a son or a daughter who's a zava or a zava, then he can bring the korbanos on their behalf, even though they have no das. That's a case of e-efsher. It's impossible any other way. What are you going to do? Wait until they're bar or bas mitzvah and all that time they can't eat korbanos? No, you just bring the korban on their behalf. But we're assuming that the same thing would apply even if you could wait. So therefore, by that logic, if we're already going to learn Efshir Mishii Efshir, then by the same, and we said, for example, that a husband brings a korban on his wife's behalf, then by the same logic, a person, one person, Ruvin, should be able to bring a korban, a regular chatas, on Shimon's behalf. Shekain Adam, maybe, Al-Ishtei Shaita. After all, we said before, that we said, Kir of Yehuda, we said before, we learned yesterday, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that a husband is responsible for his wife's korbanos. So he said that even if the wife is a shoita, if she gave birth, then the husband would bring korbanos on her behalf. And the pashtus, we're assuming that means other kinds of korbanos as well. So the same thing should apply even where you could have the other way. Shimon is perfectly capable of bringing his own korban. Nevertheless, Reuven should be allowed to bring it on his behalf. We should say, done in Efshir Mishi Efshir. Once we have cases where it's impossible any other way, it has to be the father brings on behalf of his children, it has to be the husband brings on behalf of his wife who's a shoita, we should generalize from that to other cases. So why in fact do we find Rabbi Elazar saying that if Reuven were to separate out a chatas chaylev on behalf of Shimon, then it doesn't count for anything. Shimon has to bring his own korban. Now Shimon can go and buy the animal from Reuven and bring it as a korban, of course, but Reuven can't designate the animal on his own and then bring it to the Mishmikdash and say, I'm bringing this on behalf of Shimon, and have it work. So the Gemara answers the reason why that doesn't work is because the reason why that doesn't work, let's go back to your premise. You're saying that because a man can bring a chatas on behalf of his wife and his shaita, therefore you want to generalize from that to other cases. But think of it, the Gemara says. What exactly is the scenario where the man's wife is a shaita? So what are you telling me? You're saying that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that a man can bring a chatas on behalf of his wife as a shaita. You're assuming that Rabbi Yehuda is saying not only the chatas of a yeledes to make her be able to eat kodshim, but even that he would be able to bring a chatas chelev on her behalf. But what would be the scenario where you would be bringing a chatas chelev on behalf of a wife who's a shaita anyway? If she ate the chelev at a time when she was a shaita, then there's no korban to be brought anywhere. A shaita is otter from mitzvahs, so therefore there's no, she hasn't been over on an issur, on a lav, such that she would have to, such that a chatas would have to be brought anyway. And either also she pekachas v'nishtabis. Are you talking about she ate the chelev while she was normal and afterwards she became a shaita? Well, you can't bring the korban then either. Ha'amr of Yumi, Amr of Abohu, Amr of Yechanan. If a person ate chaylev, or did any of the other isurim that make him chayev achatas, and he designated an animal for a korban, then ishtata, and then he became a shoita, where at that point the korban can't be brought, because again we're saying it requires his das, and because at a time like that he's not chayev in mitzvahs, the chosav in ishtata, even if afterwards he became normal again, possible, the animal is possible to be brought as a korban, because once the animal was pushed off, once you have a period of time where the animal was disqualified as a korban, then it remains disqualified. So all the more so over here. In other words, where the man's wife is a shoita, you certainly wouldn't say that he's bringing a chatas on her behalf in such a case. Now, the Gemara's proof is like this. The whole thing that Rabbi Yehuda is saying and Rabbi Yochanan is quoting based on him, that a man can bring a chatas on behalf of his wife who's a shoita, is strictly in the case where she's a mechuseres kapara. Strictly in the case where, for example, she's a yeledes, so a zava, and now she needs to bring a korban in order to be able to eat kodshim. That he can do because Rabbi Yochanan established that you don't need das bailin for it. But other than that, given that we never find a case where a husband is bringing a chatas chelev on behalf of his wife who's a shoita, because no matter how you look at it, it's impossible to do that. Whether she ate the chelev as a shoita, whether she ate it when she's normal, and now she's a shoita, either way, no korban is being brought. Therefore, even in a case of a husband and wife, you don't have a korban being brought in that case. So you certainly can't learn from it to a case where you have two normal people, Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven wants to bring a korban without Shimon's das, you certainly can't do that. So therefore, that is why the concept of requiring das applies to other korbanos, because we don't have a basis to say that it should apply ever to other korbanos, only to korbanos of mechuseres kapara. So now, this that we're saying, by the way, that korban would be disqualified in this case.
Is there a certain time, a week, 2 weeks, that she became crazy and then she got back there? So
it doesn't matter, apparently, even if it was only a short time. But with that said, though, the Rambam actually passed, now the Gemara isn't really dealing with it over here. In other places in Shas, the Gemara deals with the issue of whether living animals can be disqualified like that. Do we say there is a concept in halacha called dichui, that you have something that was disqualified, that was pushed off for a while from being used for a mitzvah, whether it can become qualified again afterwards? The Gemara in other cases discussed this, does that apply to living animals? And the Gemara brings in particular the opinion of Rav, who says that not. Here we're talking according to Rav Yechanan. Rav and Rav Yechanan argue on that point. Rav says that no, ein bali chayim nidchin, living animals can never be permanently disqualified like that. Unless it's something with the animal itself, of course. But if it was a disqualification, for example, because of the owner, then yes, when they become normal, they can bring the korban after all. So it comes out in a case like this, where she went crazy, she ate chelev, was normal at the time, went crazy afterwards, then became normal, then you would in fact be able to bring the korban. Nevertheless, the Gemara's proof is still valid, even according to that. And the fact is, you're not bringing the korban when she's a shoita. And when she's normal again, then the pashtus, you would have to ask her, you'd have to inform her that I'm bringing the korban on your behalf. So we see that with regular korbanos, you do require das.
What's the children?
Children, we said, children don't have das. So in the case of children also, where it's a mechuser kapara, they didn't do an aveira, they just need a korban because they were a zov or what have you, then you bring the korbanos on their behalf. That's what Rav Yechanan said. If they did an aveira, children are not chayev achatas anyhow because they don't have das for the same reason. Okay. The Gemara says.
So there's a major difference between a shote and a shogeg.
Yeah, that is the
and what?
Because
why
shogeg,
is that?
Because shogeg has normal intelligence. He didn't realize that what he was doing was wrong. He didn't realize this was chayver. We didn't know that chayver was also, as the case may be. A shote is not responsible for their actions at all. So therefore, they can't be chayver korban. Okay. The Gemara says
yes or no. I mean, you could.
That's the difference. The difference is whether a person has normal intelligence and just didn't know something or forgot something versus where they don't have normal intelligence at all. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, Elameyata, by that logic, if you're telling me then that a person can, so again, if you're thinking, if you the Makshin are thinking, Domin Efshir Mishi'i Efshir, that it, given that you have cases where a person can bring karbonos on behalf of somebody else who lacks das, and you're saying from that you can generalize, you're going to try to generalize and say that you could also, even when the person does have das, by that logic, Yavi Adam Pesach al-Chaveri, a person should be able to offer a korban Pesach on behalf of somebody else without having to tell the person to register with him first. Shekein Adam maybe al-Banim v'al-Banos v'aktanim. Because again, we see that a person can bring the korbanos of the Mechosa Kapara on behalf of his children who are aktanim. Al-Lama Omer Rav Elazar Hifrish Pesach al-Chaveri la'osef lum. So why does Rav Elazar say that if one person designates a Pesach on behalf of somebody else, it doesn't count for anything? He would have to tell the person, I'm including you in my Korban Pesach, and register him. So why is that? The answer is, Omer Rav Zeira, Selaveis Oves Lavda Araisa. The answer is, Rav Zeira says, actually you could have learned such a thing. But now, how do we know, Bechlau, that where's the basis for the concept that everybody needs to be registered for the Korban Pesach? That you can't just, for example, now with other korbanos, it's not like that. You know, a person brings, let's say, a shlomim. So he didn't have you in mind, and you walk into the house and you knock on the door. You walk in and you find them in the middle of eating a shlomim. As long as you're tahor, they can invite you to join them. The Korban Pesach, we know, is not like that. You have to pre-register. So how do we know that? Because the pasuk says, sell a base of this, there has to be a sheep for each family. So Rav Zeira is saying the concept of sell a base of this is not daraisa, meaning that midaraisa, the ketanim, do not actually have to be registered. So like this, in other words, what do we have? A person brings his korban pesach. He has in mind when he shechts it that his family is going to be included, and when they have the seder that night, then they're all going to be joining in and eating it. So Rav Zeira is saying the fact that the children are registered is not required daraisa. Well, therefore you can't learn from it. Therefore you can't learn from it for adults. So children are allowed to eat from it even though they're not registered. That doesn't necessarily show that adults, if they're not registered, should be able to eat from it. You can't learn one from the other. Actually, there is an interesting point that Rav Chaim Brisker discusses, a little lumdus in this. He says, even though Rav Zeira is saying over here that they're not required daraisa, nevertheless, if they are registered in it, then when they eat it, then they're yotze the mitzvah daraisa, and therefore, he says, that explains why you have the halacha, which the Rambam paskins, that if he was a katan at the time of Pesach Rishon, and for whatever reason, he wasn't able to eat Pesach Rishon, and then he becomes bar mitzvah before Pesach Sheni, then he eats from Pesach Sheni, or vice versa, actually. If he ate from Pesach Rishon, we don't say when he was a katan, and we don't say that now, if Pesach Sheni is brought, that he should eat from that also, because he was already yotze the mitzvah daraisa with Pesach Rishon. Even though we're saying over here, selavei savas lav daraisa, still, when he eats from it, he is in fact yotze a mitzvah daraisa, at least according to the Rambam. He goes on to say, well, even though he wasn't bar mitzvah yet at the time, yeah. And he goes on to say that other Rishonim disagree with that point. There is, in fact, a well-known machlokas about that point. Katan shehigdil ben Pesach Rishon or Pesach Sheni, should he eat from the Pesach Sheni or not? Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So Rav Zeira says, how do I know that this concept that children have to be registered for the Korban Pesach is not actually daraisa, and therefore that you can't learn from them not having to be registered that the same thing an adult shouldn't have to be? We learn in a Mishnah in Pesachim, if a father says to his children, I am going to shech the Korban Pesach on behalf of whichever one of you gets to Yerushalayim first. So in other words, the father says, I'm going ahead to Yerushalayim. You guys follow me. Whichever one of you gets there first, I'm shechting the Korban Pesach on his behalf. So the Mishnah says, the moment that the first one who comes there gets his head and most of his body into the wall of Yerushalayim, where at that point, usually in halacha, we consider the person is completely inside, zocha b'chelko, then he is zocha in his portion of the Korban Pesach, or mezakeh eschach habimai, and he also is mezakeh to his brothers along with him. In effect, in other words, we're saying that he now earns a portion of the Korban Pesach, and now he's able to share it with his brothers. So, what do you mean? The brothers weren't registered. The Amit Sela Bias Dardai. So if you say that the fact that you need everybody in the household to be registered, if you were to say it is full Dardai, sir, how could it be? Al Bisra Koyo Mazakalahu? What are you talking about? The father is already, the father or the son, as the case may be, is already, so the Ran actually gives two explanations. The first explanation is this is talking about the father. The father has already shechted the animal. We know that the registration has to take place before the animal is shechted. So now, what is he standing over the meat over there, the meat of the korban that's already been shechted, or mezakeh lahu, and he's being mezakeh to his children? How would his children be able to eat from the korban pesach if he didn't have them in mind at the time of the shechita?
He had in mind
the oldest one, let's say, but what about all the other ones? Or the Ran says another explanation is that you could say the first one who comes in, fine, he himself earns a share of the Korban Pesach, because we can say Breira, that when the Korban Pesach was shechted, then we use the concept of Breira to say retroactively it means that at the time of the Shechita, he was the one who was going to be chosen, even though he wasn't in Yerushalayim yet, but we knew that he was going to, but eventually one of them was going to get there first, and therefore retroactively we consider that it was him. Yeah, Breira is discussed all over Shas. Usually we say La Halacha, you can't do it in things that are nice, but fine, our Mishnah could hold that maybe you could. But how are the other children being zoched? How are we saying that he is mezakeh to his brothers, that now they receive a portion of the Korban Pesach as well? The father didn't have them in mind before.
Plus, that is the mezakeh is the father.
No, well, you can say he was zoched in a portion, so now he's mezakeh to them. But you can't do that after the animal is shechted. So wouldn't that show, therefore, that in fact, the whole point of Selaveis Oves, even though the Pasuk says it, is not Daraisa, in other words, that Midaraisa, it's not necessary for the children to be registered. So obviously we're talking about the children of Ktanim. There's no requirement in Atoda to register them. So therefore, no problem. You're able to say, even after the Korban is shechted, come eat from the Korban Pesach, because they don't have das anyway, and the whole concept that they should have to be pre-registered only applies to adults. But the Gemara says, in that case, Ela Lama Lahu Da'am Lahu Na'vuhin. Well, then why is their father telling them anything anyhow? If you're going to tell me that Dard Isa, they don't have to be registered anyhow, then the father has no reason to say to them anything. They're all included anyhow, exactly. The answer is you could say Kedela Zaris and the mitzvahs. The father may be telling them that in order to encourage them to do the mitzvah, to be Ola L'Regal as fast as possible. So he's giving them like an incentive. But really, it's not an incentive. Really, all of them are going to be getting a share of the Korban Pesach anyway. But like this, like the first one who got there has, so to speak, bragging rights over his brothers, that he's the one who got there first. And thanks to me, all of you have a portion of the Korban. So the Gemara says, Tanya Namihochi. In fact, we learn a braisa like that. One time it happened, a father said that to his children, and the daughters ended up being faster and getting to Yerushalayim ahead of the boys. So it comes out that the daughters were very quick, were very zoriz, very eager to do the mitzvah, and the sons were lazier. But we see, the Braisa doesn't say the daughters got a portion of Korban Pesach and the sons did not. So therefore we see all of them do in fact get a portion. But the daughters have bragging rights that we got there first, and it's thanks to us that you have the mitzvah. So we see from that that the children don't really need to be, you don't really need to have had them in mind when you shechted the Korban Pesach anyway. It's possible to include them later, and therefore you can't learn from that to other people where when it comes to adults, you do have to pre-register them, and therefore you can't say that you should be able to bring a Korban Pesach without their dice.
Why is he bringing this little part here that the first sibling was mezakeh the rest of them? You don't need that. The father was mezakeh everybody.
Because that's the point. In other words, we're saying he was zoicha because of the terms of the deal, and now with it, he brings in all his other brothers.
That's what we're saying.
Ultimately, all of them are getting a portion. It's just that son has that he's able to tell them, you know what? Thanks to me, you were all zoicha. Really, it's not so. Really, as children, Reb Zera is telling us they didn't have to be registered anyhow, but yeah. Okay. So the point is, in other words, so we've established then that with most korbanos, including the korban Pesach, you do have, so like this, when it comes to children, you can bring on their behalf korbanos of children or anybody who doesn't have das, you can bring on their behalf korbanos of mechusar kapara, the ones that make them able to eat kodshim, as well as we're saying over here the korban Pesach, you don't have to pre-register the children midaraisa. As far as other korbanos though, you can do the other korbanos. There's really nothing you can bring on a child's behalf anyhow because they're not chayiv in mitzvahs, and because of that, therefore, if the other person is an adult and has das of their own, so again, korbanos of mechusar kapara you can, because if you do it for your children, you can do it for somebody else as well, but other korbanos where the person has their own obligation, then no, you can't do that, and not korban Pesach either. So you can't bring a korban Pesach on somebody else's behalf without pre-registering him, and the same way you can't bring a chatas or an osham or what have you on behalf of somebody else without his das. The Mishnah said the Tordamas Trumois of Chola. The Mishnah said another thing. When Reuven is also to have anah from Shimon, Shimon is allowed to separate Truma on Reuven's behalf. And the Mishnah said, Midaito, with his das. Now, we have to figure out whose grain is Shimon separating the Truma from, and whose das are we talking about?
That's a new Kohen movie, right?
No, here we're not talking about Kohen anymore. Here we're talking about Reuven and Shimon are both Yisraelim. Reuven is bound by a neder not to have anah from Shimon. Nevertheless, Shimon is allowed to separate Truma on behalf of Reuven. So now we have to figure out, Ibor Lahu. So we have the question, Haturim Mishaloy al, here's a general question, which then we're going to tie back into our Mishnah. Haturim Mishaloy al Shechaver. If Shimon, in a general case, forget about Nadarit for a moment, in a regular case, when Shimon takes some of his grain and separates Truma, and separates it as Truma on behalf of Reuven, Sonich Daitoy Oloy, does he need Reuven's das to do that or not? Mi amin and kiven de schus loy loy tzarech das. Do we say, since it's a schus for Reuven, because now his food won't be tevel anymore, then therefore maybe you don't require his das after zoch in the adam shaloy b'fanav? Or do a mitzvah delayhu, or maybe you could say the mitzvah really belongs to Reuven, the nichaloy the mabbe, and Reuven himself wants to be able to do the mitzvah. So therefore, maybe Shimon doesn't have the right to take that mitzvah away from him unilaterally. So the Gemara says, Toshma, well, let's try to prove from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, Turdim es trumois of es masois of l'daitei. Our Mishnah said that when Shimon is also when Reuven is also in Hanah from Shimon, nevertheless, so Shimon is the mudr, he's the one who's the subject of the neder, where Reuven is also to have Hanah from him. Nevertheless, we said Shimon is able to take Truma and Meiser Ladaito with Reuven's das. So let's figure out what the Mishnah means. B'maya skin, what is the case the Mishnah is talking about that saying that Shimon is allowed to do? Ilema min balakri alsha balakri. Are you talking about that Shimon is taking some of Reuven's grain, that he's taking some of Reuven's grain and separating it as Truma on behalf of the rest of Reuven's grain? Well, uladaita deman. Well, then whose das are we talking about that is involved over here? Ilema ladaita delay. Does it mean with Shimon's das, without him having checked with Reuven? How could that be? Man shav yeshliach. Whoever appointed him a shliach. In order to separate truma from somebody else's grain, you have to be appointed their shliach. The Gemara discusses this at the beginning of Eilu Metzias. You have a pasuk that says, "Kain terimu gam atem." We learn from there. We learn the concept of shlichus. Just like you're able to do the mitzvah, you're able to delegate to somebody else as a shliach, but it has to be midaita. Just like you would take terimu with your own das, your shliach, it has to be with your das that you know he's going to do it. So if we're talking about over here that Shimon goes over to Reuven's grain pile and takes part of it and designates it as truma without Reuven's das, that wouldn't be considered truma anyhow. Elo l'dayte d'balakri. So when you're talking about that Shimon asks Reuven, should I do that? And he goes and does that. Well, then that can't be. Here we're talking about Nedarim. Hokamahani lay. Well, then he's causing Reuven a hana. Dekarovit shlichus. He's accomplishing his shlichus. That Reuven delegated him to do it. So obviously obviously our Mishnah cannot be talking about where the Truma itself came from Reuven's grain pile. Ela Mishaloy al-Shalakri. So obviously we have to be talking about that Shimon is giving of his own grain on behalf of Reuven's grain. Well, then fine. So again, we have to ask all the Dai to demand. Again, whose Das is involved over here? Ivlaimul of Dai to Balakri, do we mean that that Ruvain knows about it? Same problem. Hokamahanile, then he's doing him Ahana. Because he's doing the Shrichus.
If he takes off from his own and Zachary's friend, his friend has to take off from his stuff, his
thing. No, so what we learned already earlier in the parak that Avruchi Avi is mutter, where you're just preventing the person from suffering a loss or having to pay out money or something, that would be mutter even by Mudu Hana. So over here, yes, if it weren't for Shimon doing this, Reuven would have to give Truma on his own, but that's not, you're not actually giving Reuven anything, you're preventing Reuven from having to give Truma, and that, he said, is mutter by Mudu Hana.
Even though it actually cost them.
So even though it would cost them otherwise, but we're not worried about what it would cost. We're concerned about that you can't actually give him something. But for example, we learned at the beginning of the parak, you can pay off a debt on his behalf, loan or debt on his behalf, because that's considered a bruchei ari. So he would be the same thing.
That's running away from the
lion. Yeah, but not that's chasing away a lion. Like imagine you have a lion ready to attack his sheep, and you chase away the lion. That's not considered a hana. Yeah. So, Ela Lav Ladai Tivinatri. So by elimination, the case of our Mishnah saying that Shimon is allowed to take Truma on Reuven's behalf must be talking about with his own Das. When the Mishnah says Ladai Toy, it must mean with Shimon's Das without Reuven knowing about it. Umishaloi Torah Mal Shachaveh, right? And that implies that we have to be talking about that Shimon is giving from his own grain on behalf of Reuven. Because again, if it was out of Reuven's grain, he would have to be his shliach, and he can't be his shliach because he's Mudu Hana. So by elimination, out of the four possibilities, Reuven's grain or Shimon's grain, with Reuven's Das, without Reuven's Das, the only one that's going to work in terms of our Mishnah would seem to be the case where it's out of Shimon's own grain and with only Shimon's Das. And the Mishnah is implying that it works. So there we go then. So the Iyam Tzorich Das. Now if you say that it requires Das, then it would mean that then he's giving him Anah. Elalav Ein Tzorich Das. So wouldn't that show that you don't need Das? So that would be the answer. We ask whether if Shimon is giving from his own grain on behalf of Reuven, does he require Reuven's Das or not? Okay, because can we say Zochen La'adam Shalom Fonav? Or Mishnah seems to be proving that yes, you could. The answer is La'olam Mishabalakri. The answer is not necessarily. Which, by the way, so yeah, in terms of what we learned the other day about paying off somebody's debt, so the Ran brings, first he says that, now we had the discussion the other day involving the opinion of Chonon. We said when you had a case where a husband goes overseas and his wife needs food and somebody goes and supports her voluntarily, where Chonon said you don't have to pay the guy back, and the Bnei Kohenim Dolem said you do. So we discussed the other day, the Mishnah that had said that you can pay off somebody's debt. Is that only according to Chonon, or is it even according to the Chachamim? So the Ran first says, that the Ran first brings from the Rashba, that our Mishnah, again, would be like Chonon. Because after all, if the Chachamim say that you can't pay off somebody's debt, then by the same token, they wouldn't say over here that you can separate Truma on his behalf. On the other hand, the Ran himself disagrees, because after all, the Gemara is going to establish soon that in a case like this, where Shimon is taking Truma on behalf of Reuven, then Shimon has the Toivas Hana. Shimon has the benefit. He gets to decide which Kohen gets the Truma. Normally, in a regular case, a person has grain or whatever, and they take Truma from it. They don't have to give it to the first Kohen they see. They're allowed to save it for a particular Kohen. You could even have, for example, that another person could go over to Reuven and say to him, you know what, I myself am a Yisrael, I can't take the Truma, but I have a grandson, my daughter is married to a Kohen, they have a son, my grandson who's a Kohen, I'd like to give you a few dollars, and you give this Truma to my grandson, the Kohen. And you're allowed to do that. And then Reuven is allowed to keep a few dollars. Well, by the same token here, says the Ran, here, when Shimon is going to be separating Truma on behalf of Reuven, he has the Tovas Hanah. So it's not like the case when you're paying off somebody's debt. You have no Tovas Hanah involved. You paid up. But over here, you have a certain benefit that you have something which is worth a few dollars, namely that you have the ability for somebody else to offer you to give you a few dollars to give the Truma to his grandson or whoever. So therefore we can consider that, even the Chachamim might say such a thing as mutter. Because not really just doing a hana for the other person, he's doing a hana for himself. Anyway, again, back to the Gemara. So the question was, again, that out of the four possibilities, Reuven, Shimon giving out of his own grain versus out of Reuven, with Reuven's das or without, the only one that would work in terms of our Mishnah is Shimon giving out of his own grain, but without Reuven's das. Because if it's with his das, then he's doing a mana. So therefore, that would show that it's mutter. The Gemara says not necessarily. Actually, we could say that our Mishnah is talking about where Shimon is taking grain from Reuven's pile and doing it on behalf of Reuven. What about the fact that he needs Reuven's das and otherwise not valid truma? Kid Omar Rava, just like Rava says, a little further down on the Amud, that actually, the Gemara quotes in the name of the Amuroyim generally, Amri, it says they said, but whatever, here the Gemara is saying that it was Rava who said it. But Omar Kolarotz of Litra and Yavari Litra, the case could be where to begin with, Reuven announced, anybody who wants to take truma from my pile of grain, go ahead and do it. So he's leaving it open that anybody can do it. So he's not appointing any particular person as a shliach. So there, on the other hand, when it comes to the dinim of Nedarim, since he didn't explicitly say, you, Shimon, are my shliach, then therefore Shimon is allowed to do it. So we could say the Mishnah is talking about that case doesn't necessarily demonstrate that we're talking about a case where Shimon is taking from his own grain and doing it on behalf of Reuven.
So he says it makes an announcement, whoever wants to
come. He makes an announcement, whoever wants to come. I have my pile of grain over here. Whoever wants to come and take truma from it, and then they can do that.
Let's say a
Kohen,
right?
It doesn't matter, a Kohen or Yisrael. If it's a Kohen, the Kohen can take truma right away. If it's Yisrael, he'll have to find a Kohen to give it to. The Ran, by the way, mentions, now what about if Reuven said something slightly different? What if Reuven were to say, whoever hears my voice, please go take truma? Then the Ran says that would be different. That would be considered making him an actual shliach. Now, Shimon, being a Mordor Hanah from Reuven, would not be allowed to do that. And the Ran mentions, for example, we have a din in Gittin, that if a person, let's say, you have a person is in a pit, and he can't get out, and he's afraid he's going to die in there, and of course, you know, then his wife is going to have to do Yibum, or he might be an Aguna, or whatever, so he yells out, and whoever hears my voice, write a get on her behalf, and we know a get, yeah, the husband has to appoint whoever's doing it as a shliach, that's considered a valid appointment of shlichus, and now the first person who hears him can go and write the get and give it to the wife. So we see that saying, whoever hears my voice, is actually considered making him a shliach. But here, when he just says, whoever wants to, go ahead, then that's not really making shlichus, so therefore Shimon would be allowed to do it.
But when he says out loud, whoever wants to do it, he doesn't know who's listening, or he doesn't know.
That's true, but nevertheless, if he says, whoever hears my voice, please do it, that's making a shliach. But if he says, whoever hears this can go ahead and do it, then that's not considered making a shliach. Then the Ram says there's a third possibility, actually. You could also have where he announces, anybody who takes truma will not lose out. Now, for example, you have in Hilchos Shabbos, you have a case, for example, where you have a fire in your house, and you announce to in the presence of a bunch of goyim, kol ha-machabe einem mafsid, whoever puts out the fire will not lose out, which is implying, in other words, that, yeah, I'll compensate you after Shabbos. So then we say, so in Hilchos Shabbos, you're not allowed to do that. So here, actually, or maybe you are allowed to do it in Hilchos Shabbos, I don't remember. Anyway, over here, if he says, kol ha-todim einem mafsid, then the Ran says, then it wouldn't even be valid, like, for truma either. So in other words, the Ran is saying you have three possibilities. You have, the weakest one of all is saying, whoever does this will not lose out. That's not considered a shlichus at all. Therefore, if a person now listens to that and goes and takes truma, it will not be valid truma. Then you have the middle case, it won't be valid, Truma, the Ran says. That's not considered a strong enough lashon. On the other hand, if you say, whoever wants to come and give Truma can go and do so, that is considered enough of a shlichus that now whoever does that, it is valid Truma, and also then a Mudur Hanah is allowed to do that because you haven't appointed him explicitly as a shliach. The first lashon is saying whoever does it will not lose out, and the second one is saying whoever wants to, go ahead and do it. So it's a fine line, but that's, yeah, halacha is all about fine lines, yeah. And the third one is where he says, whoever hears my voice, go and give truma, that is considered actually appointing shlichus, and there if he's a mudur hanah, then he can't do it. That's how the Ran breaks down the three possibilities.
Even though he doesn't even know who's actually doing it.
So hochanami, so getting back to the Gemara, hochanami, the same thing over here, you can say, ba'orim v'chola, the same thing, Reuven to begin with announced, whoever wants to give truma from my pile of grain, go ahead and do it. So now Shimon is allowed to do that because he's not. So he has the das of Reuven because Reuven said whoever wants to. On the other hand, Reuven didn't appoint him a shliach, therefore he's not giving him anah, and therefore he's allowed to do it. So no proof necessarily whether it's possible for Shimon to give truma on from his grain on behalf of Reuven without Reuven's das. Maybe, maybe not. We haven't proved it one way or the other.
On the other hand, when when he says whoever wants to give can give.
Yeah.
And he goes and gives it to a certain coin, which is his grant.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about now. One second. Now we're going to talk about that. So, Bominer of Yumi and Reb Zera. So now Reb Yumi asked Reb Zera, in a case like that, suppose that Shimon does take from his produce and gives it on behalf of Reuven. So let's say, fine, before we were asking about whether he needs Reuven's das, let's say he has Reuven's das. Let's say, forget about the case of a Mudra Anna. You just have a regular case. Reuven and Shimon are two regular Jews. Reuven has a pile of grain. Shimon volunteers that he's going to take some of his grain and give it as truma on behalf of Reuven. If he has Reuven's das, no question that it works. The question was whether it works without Reuven's das. The question would be, Tovas Hanah Mishel Mi. Who has Tovas Hanah? Now, when we say that this truma can be given to whatever kohen, and somebody could pay you a few dollars to give that truma to a particular kohen, who gets that Tovas Hanah? And do we say, do we say, look, after all, if it weren't for Shimon taking his produce and giving it as truma, then Reuven's pile wouldn't be Mesukah, and it would still be Tevel. So therefore, Shimon is the one who gets the Tovas Hanah. Or vice versa, without Reuven's pile of grain being there, Shimon's fruit wouldn't be truma. So, in other words, they both of them are interdependent. Each one of them is contributing something essential to the same truma. So, which one gets the Tovas Hanah? Reuven has a pile of grain.
Right.
Shimon volunteers and says, Reuven, I'm going to take some of my grain and designate it as truma on your behalf. And Reuven tells him, go ahead. Now, when you have this grain that is truma, if somebody now comes over to them and says, you know, I have a grandson who's a Kohen, can you please give it to him? I'll give you a few dollars. Who gets the few dollars? Reuven or Shimon? Is Reuven entitled to it because without his pile of grain there wouldn't be truma over here? Or is Shimon entitled because without him designating truma there wouldn't be truma to give? Reb Zera answers Reb Yemia, Omakra, you have the Pasuk. Eis kol tvuas zarecha v'nasata. The Pasuk says that you designate all the tvua of your grain and you give. Mephoshim explained over here, that's not really the Pasuk the Gemara meant to quote, because that Pasuk is actually talking about Ma'aseh Sheni. Rather, the Rosh quotes a different Pasuk, Eis kol masa tvuas v'nasata. All the miser of your grain, of your produce, and you give. So in context, the Pasuk is saying you give it to the Levi and the Ger, and so on and so forth. But in other words, we're doubting because of the way it's phrased in the Pasuk, that it means that when you're giving miser, it's yours to give to whoever you want. It depends on the produce of your seed. It's the produce of Reuven's seed, because he's the one who planted and harvested it. He's the one who owns the pile of grain. Therefore, he would be the one who gets the Tovas Hanah. He's the one who has the right, the Nasata, to decide which Kohen should get this truma. Therefore, he gets the Tovas Hanah.
So in our case,
it would be Reuven, not Shimon. Because Reuven is the one who owns the pile of grain.
Yeah, but Shimon had,
even though Shimon offered to do truma on his behalf, nevertheless, Reuven would be the one who gets the Tovas Hanah.
Yes,
yeah, so Shimon's
not having it at all.
Right, fine.
That looks like it.
Well, in a case of Mudra Anah, fine, but we're not talking about Mudra Anah over here. We're just talking a regular case. We're asking a more general thing. So Eisfei, we're going to relate it to our Mishnah. Eisfei, so now Rabbi Yumia asks Rabbi Zera, what about our Mishnah? We said that Shimon, who Reuven is also to have Anah from, can give Truma and Meiser with his das. The Amit Tovas Hanah the Balakri. If you're saying that Reuven has the Tovas Hanah, that now he can decide who to give that truma to, Hakamahani way, wouldn't it be now he has Hanah? Now he has Tovas Hanah. Like this, he would have. It's not a matter of fine. The truma itself was saying is Mavriachari, but the fact that now he is able to take that truma and decide which Kohen gets it and be able to get some money to be able to decide that would be a Hanah that he's receiving from Shimon. Doesn't that show that the Tovas Hanah should belong to Shimon? And if it belongs to Shimon, then Reuven is getting no direct Hanah from Shimon. All he's getting is Mavriach Hari, and we already established that that's fine. Amri. So they answered, Loi, Mishabala Kri, Al Shabala Kri. No, because we could be talking about, again, like we said before, that our Mishnah is not talking about Shimon voluntarily offering some of his grain as truma on behalf of Reuven, but rather that Shimon is going over to Reuven's grain pile and taking truma from it. What about that he needs to be a shliach? We said before, it means that he has the das of the owner of the pile of Reuven, because we said before, Reuven can be announcing anybody who wants to give Terumah can give Terumah. So he said that's a strong enough shlichus that it's considered with his das, but not strong enough to ask his Shimon to do it. So you could say, of course, in that case, the Tovus HaNoah goes to Reuven. It was his grain, that's Terumah. But you're asking about a case where Shimon gave some of his grain as Terumah on behalf of Reuven. Maybe that would be different. So you can't necessarily prove from our Mishnah.
But for what would be wrong if Shimon gave from his own?
Nothing, but we said it can't. We said it wouldn't work out. First we thought that's what our Mishnah means. We said not necessarily. Our Mishnah may be talking about the case where the grain, all of the grain, whatever's left, and the grain that's being offered as truma is all from Reuven. And the only thing is, we're saying that Reuven made this announcement, kolor to litrim yavav yitrim. No proof that our Mishnah is talking about a case where Shimon is taking his own grain and giving it on behalf of Reuven, where then you want to ask who the Tovus HaNoah should belong to. You can't necessarily prove that one way or the other from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah could be talking about that case, but it doesn't have to.
But that case I'm going to bring down now is for sure he's having a
no. Well, no, that's the thing. That's what we're asking. We could say that if Shimon, if Shimon is offering his own grain and giving it and saying, Reuven, this is going to be truma on behalf of your pile of grain. And then we would say, if we were to say, like Reb Zeira is saying, that at the Tovus HaNoah belongs to Reuven, then yes, Reuven would be getting an actual HaNoah from Shimon, and we can't have that.
Because
now he has the Tovus HaNoah. Now he's able to receive a few dollars in order to give this truma to whoever he wants. But if you say that the truma, if you say that the Mishnah is talking about where the truma belongs to Reuven to begin with, of course he had the Tovus HaNoah all along. All Shimon did was to go and accomplish. Reuven wanted that somebody should give Truma on his behalf. Shimon did that. That's not considered giving him Hanoah because he just announced in a generic way whoever wants. Yeah. So the Gemara says Toshwa.
One part of it is the Ari. The other part is the actual thing being able to.
Yeah, is the Tovus HaNoah, right. So the Gemara says Toshma, we can prove it in a different way. The Amar Rabbo, Amar Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Bohu says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, three dinim, that involve three different areas of halacha, that involve where you have two people, one doing something on behalf of another, and you have different dinim in each case. Number one, hamakdish moisif chomish. Suppose that a person has an animal for a korban. It develops a mum, so now you have to be poyde. You have to buy it back from hekdish, and then you have to use that money to buy a different animal. Now, usually we know if you yourself own something, and then you buy it back from the hekdesh, you have to add a chumash. You have to add 25%. So here, hamakdish. Now, what happens if Reuven, to begin with, designated an animal on behalf of Shimon? Now, we said before, you can't offer it on behalf of Shimon without his das, but you could. Reuven can take one of his animals and say, I am designating this as a chatas, for example, on behalf of Shimon, and he informs Shimon of it, and then Shimon takes it to the Beis Mikdash and brings it. So now, what happens if that animal develops a mum? Hamakdish moisif chomish. The one who was makdish it is the one who would add the 25%, not the miskaper. Meaning that if Shimon goes and pays hekdish money to redeem this animal from hekdish, he would not have to pay a chomish. Only Reuven, who designated the animal, would have to, because he's considered the owner of the animal.
Reuven
is the one who owns the animal, and he designated as a korban on behalf of Shimon.
Who has to pay this money?
So we're saying Reuven is called the Makdish, Shimon is called the Miskaper.
Right.
The Makdish, Reuven is the one who would be paying the Chomish.
Right, it's his animal.
The Makdish is not really a Shliach. If Reuven should have to pay the Chomish if he's the Makdish Shliach.
That's what we're saying. It's not really a matter of shlichus. It's a matter of that it was his animal. It was his animal, and therefore, when he's poided, he's the one who would have to pay the chomish. Now, in other words, the point is, we don't say that since Shimon is going to be using this animal for the kapara, maybe he should be considered the owner as well, and therefore he would pay the chomish as well. No, we don't say that. In terms of ownership of the animal, it belongs to Reuven until it's actually brought as a korban.
Reuven makes Shimon a shliach to bring the animal.
First of all, it's the other way around. Reuven owns the animal. He is designating it on behalf of Shimon. If anything, Shimon is making Reuven a shliach. But the point is, it was Reuven's animal. So therefore, some machdish Moses Chemish. Let's continue. It'll maybe become a little clearer. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan says, when it comes to which one is capable of making a tmura with it, that would be the meskaper, that would be Shimon. Namely, we know the Torah tells us that if you have an animal for a korban and you say this other animal should be in exchange for this one, so the Torah tells us you're not allowed to do it, lo yachlifenu v'lo yomeroise, but if you do, then both of them become kodesh. So now, the one who's capable of making the tmura would actually be the meskaper. The owner, Reuven, would not, because even though it's his animal, the Gemara explains in tmura, the Gemara learns from Sukkim, that for this purpose of tmura, Shimon is considered the owner. So for the purpose of Choymesh, Reuven is considered the owner. For the purposes of tmura, Shimon is considered the owner, because he's the meskaper.
They're both 25%?
So only Reuven would have to pay the 25%. But if it comes to tmura, only Shimon is, in other words, think of it. If I have an animal of a korban, and you say this animal should be a tmura for that other one, nothing happens. It's my animal. But unless the Gemara discussed it in tmura, if I gave permission for you to do it, that's another matter, but whatever. Here, if Reuven didn't give permission and Shimon makes a tmura, that works because Shimon has a partial ownership of this animal to the extent he's the meskaper, after all. He's the one, when this animal is offered as the korban, he's the one who's going to have the kapara for what he did. Therefore, he's considered the partial owner as far as that particular deal. And the third thing that Rabbi Yochanan says, v'atorim mishaloi al she'ena shaloi, that in a case where Shimon gives truma from his produce on behalf of Reuven, the case that we've been talking about over here on this Amud, tovas hana shaloi, then yes, the tovas hana is his, is Shimon's. So not like Rabbi Zeira had wanted to say that it would be Reuven's, but rather we learn from what Rabbi Yochanan said that it belongs to Shimon, and Shimon is the one who can decide who to give that tovas hana to. That's what we said before. The Ran explained that is why, in the case of On Mishnah, Shimon is able to give truma from Reuven's is able to give truma on behalf of Reuven. We could even be talking about where Shimon is giving where Shimon is giving from his own grain, and was saying that's not considered that he's giving something to Reuven because ultimately he is the one who has the hana, not Reuven. As far as Reuven, it's only Mavriah Ari, it's only preventing him from having to give Truma of his own. When it comes to the Tovus Hana, though, Reuven is not getting it, which then that would be considered a Hana. Shimon is, and therefore there's no problem with that. In this connection, by the way, there is discussion in Halacha about the interesting question in general. If you have, so for example, let's say you're baking challah on behalf of somebody else. Are you allowed to give challah without the owner knowing? The Ramah actually brings that yes, so usually you should ask the owner, but if it's going to spoil before you bake it, then yes, you're allowed to, because we're saying in the Gemara over here, Zachin La'adam Shalei B'fanav. And then the Ksois argues with that and saying that no, because Zachin La'adam Shalei B'fanav would only apply when it's from his own. Here we're talking about you have to be appointed a shliach by somebody else. So therefore, the Ksois says it wouldn't work. And there's further discussion among the Achroinim about the ins and outs of that. Okay, Shkoyach, everyone.
Yeah, but regarding the union of truma, it seems like very far-fetched that you can take an animal from someone without and making a an exchange without that person's agreement.
Well, that's what we're saying. Usually you can't, but in this case, where Shimon actually has a certain partial ownership of it, because after all, he is going to be the meskaper, he is going to be the one for whom the kapara is going to be, then the Gemara learns in Tmura from Sukkim that in fact his ownership of it extends to that extent where he is the one capable of making the Tmura, and Reuven is not, by the way. The point is that Reuven is not the one capable, because even though it does belong to him, but he's given up that right because he's doing it on behalf of Shimon.
Well, then what you're saying is Reuven has to give up, has to have his consent for Shimon to do the...
The very fact that he designated on behalf of Shimon means that he gave that consent. Yeah.